Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, it's been kind of warm here in the last few days, which is, well, that's normal for Florida, but I kind of like the thunderstorms in the afternoon to kind of cool things off, so hopefully we'll get into our tropical cycle and just get this blasting rain, which is really great because it only lasts for about 10 or 15 minutes. And so, you know, if you don't like it, just sit in your car and just kind of, you know, watch the show, and then, you know, as the rain moves on, you know, thunderstorms are only a couple miles wide, so off they go. It's Friday. It's Memorial Day weekend. I mean, I don't think people have a lot of serious stuff on their mind right now unless you have to. And, of course, there's a lot of people, you know, this whatever crisis you're going through, whether it's family, injury, you know, even COVID, you know, it's one of those things. And especially now this Memorial Day, I remember last year, actually it was Shannon Rice and I that made a video in the Veterans Memorial Park here in Milton, Florida. Milton, for those who don't know, and I still should put this in the intro, that Milton, you know, beautiful downtown Milton is in beautiful downtown Florida in the Panhandle in the upper northwest corner, you know, sort of surrounded by Alabama here. And it's a very interesting place. It's very different than where I was in California. Anyway, so Shannon is a member of the Milton City Council and is on the show Monday mornings. And so what last year, you know, in defiance, being the defiant, independent people we are, she's a veteran of the Air Force, and I'm just defiant. Very patriotic, too, both of us. But what was interesting was we went to the park because they banned the ceremony. And it is fascinating to think about how far we've come in the last year towards totalitarianism and how willing people are to submit to it, except the folks that are now turning around saying, you know what, I think this is one just big mistake. One huge mistake, and I think it's time to correct it. So I don't know how many folks are going to be calling in. I've been checking on my regular reporters for today, but it is a holiday weekend, so, you know, if they're not here, I'm not surprised. So this might be a really short show. I might just ramble for half an hour and go home. It just kind of depends on my mood here. But we'll see how it goes. So if you want to call in, this is actually a really good chance to call. Okay, Jim's coming. We're still waiting here on Derek. And so Jim's going to be there. So at least I know I just have an hour to kind of sit here and chat with you. But there's a lot going on. Title of the show, probably overly dramatic, but you never know. I mean, you know, sometimes I state things and I think, well, that's crazy. That could never happen. And of course, it turns out to happen. Governments used to just shoot their people. Now they vaccinate. And so my latest theory is, amongst others, there's a lot of complex things going on here. This is why you can't say, you know, it's like this. I guess, rush to oversimplify. The virus was released by China from the Wuhan lab. Well, yeah, I'm sure it was, okay? But that's not the issue. Well, I mean, it is the issue, but it's not the main issue. The main issue is why it was created in the first place. You know, they're asking the where and the when. They're not asking the why. And, you know, what's the origin of the coronavirus? Is it the Wuhan lab? No. I actually think it's Moderna, okay? That's the theory I'm working off this morning, that the real origin of the coronavirus is Moderna. And it started about 11 years ago when Moderna was found in 2010. And I'll probably end up doing some research over the next, you know, several weeks. I want to see if I can get in touch with Dr. David Martin, who's done some great work on this. He's sort of a legal doc. He looks into the legal aspects and the medical aspects of a particular issue. But it looks like this is really a grand experiment in messenger RNA technology. And as I talked about before, my March 15th, 16th, and 17th shows, where I provided what I think is enough evidence to show that the vaccine came years before the virus. The virus is simply part of the marketing, okay? The virus was created to scare you, to provide the means by which to declare an emergency, by the means by which to then have emergency use authorizations, the means by which to put a brand new technology, messenger RNA gene shots, you know, into the public in a mass trial of the world, you know, so they didn't have to wait 10 years. This is all about marketing and money. We went over this a couple of days ago. The billionaires that have been created from this pandemic, and there's two main sources: Moderna and China. Okay. Now, you know, for a communist country, they're creating a hell of a lot of billionaires. Okay. So like I say, this is through the looking glass. Nothing is as it seems. Speaking of China, I do have a rather interesting note as I'm looking at my world map before the show. I like to see which countries we're in. It's just a fascination with me because you never know how many listeners. You just know that there is, because it's pretty small percentage. Most people are U.S. listeners, like 95% of the show listeners are in the United States. But and some other countries come pretty high: Canada, Australia, Germany, Israel, and Australia. I think did I mention Australia right? Anyway, those are the highest countries listed in. China was there from almost day one, because you know the Chinese Communist Party, they want to monitor everything coming out of the United States. And something new like Action Radio, you know, if Action Radio catches on in China, I don't want to think about it. But let me put it this way: it's going to get very, very interesting around here. Because if the Chinese ever get the idea that they can write their own laws, yeah, the Communist Party is going to have the most – actually, it would be pretty sad because the Communist Party would have a massive crackdown. So the question is, speculative ones that are listening right now, did China just stop listening because they weren't interested in freedom, which I sincerely doubt, or did China actually cut off Action Radio to mainland China? And we're still in Taiwan, we're still in South Korea, we're still in Japan, we're still in the surrounding areas, but mainland China dropped off the map. And hey, what's his name? Xi Jinping. Was something I said? We'll never know. But China's not on the map anymore, so I find that quite interesting. Anyway, enjoy your gas prices this weekend. The president has done a rather I say the president, I mean Donald Trump, okay? So I don't know who that guy is in the White House, but he's certainly not the president. So the president, Donald Trump, has said, hey, miss me yet? You know, can you hear me now? It's kind of funny that the gas prices are spiking. And I forgot who I was talking to. I think I was talking to somebody yesterday. I said it is impossible to believe that Americans would have supported anything that's going on right now. And that's why they had to steal the election. Because if you campaign, you know, go to the heartland of America and say, we're going to raise your gas prices. We're going to let in a flood of illegal aliens, which are probably going to go after your daughter. You know, we're going to destroy our foreign policy. We're going to let Iran, you know, give missiles to Hamas in Gaza and launch them against Israel because we don't care. You know, we're going to get a Russian pipeline, you know, all through Europe so they can make billions upon billions of dollars while you're being starved for energy, you know, and we're going to cut off the Keystone Pipeline. You know, we're going to make environmentalism so strict that, you know, we'll tell you how much power you can have and how much gas you can have and where you can live and how big your house can be, you know, and all this stuff that they're doing. It is impossible to believe that Americans would vote for it. So the simple fact is they wouldn't, which is why they stole the election, okay? I mean, if you just look at it from a logical and a rational point of view, you realize that's the only way they could have gotten in the White House, okay? Because the things that Trump was doing were just far too popular. Energy independence, you know, telling the NATO to start paying their bills, you know, stopping a potential war with North Korea and stopping the missiles flying over. You know, all the things that Trump did, sealing the southern border as much as possible, working with Mexico and the other countries to say, hey, you know, have your folks wait there, you know, just doing all the things that, that Trump did, opening up Saudi Arabia. You know, that was a huge one too. The Abraham Accords, you know, bringing countries together in the Middle East, never were together. All right. You know, they're working on it, but Trump advanced it. So the idea to believe that Biden actually won anything is impossible. It's intellectually dishonest and it's irrational because you look what's being done now. You know, do you think people are in favor of this? Think people want to be represented by an idiot? No, Americans aren't stupid. I mean, they might be, you know, they're cut off from information and naive about a bunch of things, but they're not stupid. Okay, so the idea that we want to be represented by a moron and a party girl as our president and vice president is irrational. Americans just aren't like that. So obviously they had to steal it. I mean, so there's your evidence right there. There's your probable cause. Right. Your probable cause through logic and reason is that it is impossible to believe that Americans would have wanted what we're getting now, because Americans aren't like that. We're independent, you know, rugged individuals. Oh, speaking of which, I didn't even put this in my notes, but I might as well address this issue. One American News has the white men's, you know, workshop that's going on at Lockheed Martin. Okay, Lockheed Martin, one of our biggest defense contractors, you know, staffed, I'd say, by a lot of white men. Okay, and your problem is what? There's a lot of white men in this country. Why shouldn't they work at Lockheed Martin? You know, I'm really getting sick to death of this picking on the white guy stuff. All right. And so they had this thing, this I don't know what you'd call him, this wimpy metrosexual white guy comes up and he starts talking about, well, white men don't trust other white men. They learn about diversity from people of color and women, you know, because what he basically says, white men are stupid. Here's a white guy saying that white guys are stupid, right? So he's going on this and he says, you know, fill in the blank, fill in the first thing that comes to your mind when I say white man. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, white men invented pretty much everything. Okay, let me give you another one. White men wrote our founding documents, you know, creating a free country. White men, you know, have done, well, let's see what else I can, built most of this country. You know, white men started most of our major corporations. The fact that you have oil and computers and, you know, and light bulbs and airplanes and things like that is because of white men. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. All right. So, that's how I'd be answering the question. Oh, I'd love to go to one of these workshops. Oh, please let me go to a workshop one day. You know, because I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'll screw around with them. You bet. But this idea that I'm supposed to feel bad because I'm a white guy. Screw you. I don't feel bad at all. But as for this, all this white privilege, you know, where is it? Have you seen my bank account? No, of course not. It's private. But that's not the point. The point is, if I have, where's my privilege? You know, where's my privilege account? Why can't I just go to the bank and say, can you show me the white privilege, please? I'd like to start my white privilege account at this point and let's see what the deposits are. Ain't happening. There ain't no such thing, okay? So this idea, especially as an immigrant coming to this country where I wasn't even American until I'd been here 5 years and proved my worth and, you know, didn't become a public charge, in other words, didn't go on welfare, you know, didn't commit crimes, didn't do all those nasty things that'll deny you citizenship, didn't work for a foreign government, didn't serve in a foreign military, didn't do any number of things that can cancel your ability to get citizenship. See, people don't realize that. It's not automatic, all right? You got to kind of earn it, even when you're here as a legal public, you know, a legal permanent resident. It doesn't mean you get your citizenship, okay? At least that's the way it used to be, you know, back in the system where we actually believed in citizenship. Now, hell, just walk into the country and take stuff, all right? So there's a replacement program going on, and I've talked about this with a few of our folks, that the left wants to push abortions of Americans and bring in illegal aliens, basically replacing people who believe in freedom with people who are a peasant class from other countries, okay? That's a problem, all right? But let's get back to the main thing here. Where's my topic? You know, I never think I'm going to have enough to say. And then I look at the clock and go, gee, I have been talking for a while. So if you want to, you know, interrupt this stream of consciousness, feel free. Slow down, Greg. 215-383-3832. So governments used to just shoot their people. In other words, when the government wanted to serve, you know, cull the population, when they wanted to get rid of a bunch of people, well, they didn't just shoot them. You know, they either starved them to death or sent them into war or any number of things. Or you had the killing fields, you know, they just wiped everybody out in Cambodia and, you know, China just starved everybody to death, Russia starved everybody to death, you know, and Germany sent the people into camps and wars and had extermination camps, okay? So when totalitarian governments wanted to just wipe out the population, they used to do it the old-fashioned way, obviously. Nowadays, see, we're a little more sophisticated now. We have the internet. They have to convince us to kill ourselves, which is really what's going on, you know, with the whole vaccine thing. And I'm really scared for the people, the friends of mine that have taken this thing, all right, you know, because they think they're doing the right thing. I mean, they really do. And I appreciate that. And I understand that. I just believe that they're horribly wrong. And I don't want to say anything too much because they've already had the vaccine. How do I say, I think you're going to die in 6 months? I hope not. You know, how do I tell people? You know, I don't want to say things to people that have already had the vaccine because there's nothing I can do at that point. All right. This is what I'm trying to do my best to make sure you don't have the vaccine ahead of time. I mean, you can always take it later if you think it's safe and, you know, wonderful, but at least get your information. All right. Find out what's in it. You know, I mean, you folks read ingredients on food labels. You know, you're not going to, so here's a weird one. People won't buy genetically modified organisms, GMOs. They won't buy GMO food, but they'll get a GMO vaccine. Okay. Which is really a messenger RNA. So in other words, how this works, I'm still learning more about it. And as I learn more about it, I'm finding different ways to explain it. Okay. So to understand a messenger RNA gene shot masquerading as a vaccine, understand that your cell has DNA. Okay. Your DNA, those are the genes, those are the chromosomes, those are the things that is in every cell that defines who you are. Okay. That's your code. That's the code of your life is your DNA. All right. In order for that DNA to replicate accurately, it has to have RNA. RNA is a messenger. It's kind of like the instruction manual. Okay. So your DNA is directed by the instruction manual, which is the RNA. All right. So the RNA goes is in a cell, and then it tells the cell how to replicate to make sure that the DNA replicates accurately. So it's exactly the same every time. Okay. It's a pretty amazing process. In fact, it's amazing. It's so amazing. This is where God comes in. Okay. And you think, wow, how did that, what an amazing system. You think, you know, we created that? No. Sorry. It's too complex. I mean, we're good, but we're not that good. You can take the biggest supercomputer in the world and you would not come up with this kind of a system. I don't think that is working as well as it has for, you know, the billions of years we've been here, plus all the other life forms on all the other planets. We'll see what happens with the UFO report. All right. So back to the cell. So your cell divides, the DNA divides in half. Okay. The DNA divides completely. When you're born, your cells divide in half from the mother, half from the father. You know, chromosomes come together and form a whole thing. Otherwise, you'd be doubling your DNA every person. And I'm off on a tangent here. But the point being, your DNA divides. Well, how does it know how to divide? Well, it has to have instructions. Well, what are the instructions? The messenger RNA. Okay. So the messenger RNA are the instructions from your cell to your cell to make sure that the cell divides accurately. Okay. If I'm wrong in this, any microbiologists want to call in, feel free. I mean, I have no pride of authorship of my information. I do the best I can. And if I'm wrong, then tell me. It's okay. Anyway, but so that's how messenger RNA works. So what the messenger RNA gene shots, you know, masquerading as vaccines do is they change the instructions. Okay. So in other words, they will put your life on put your DNA on a computer and they will change the messenger RNA to something else. So the question is what? And nobody knows, really. They don't. Well, I mean, they do know. They think they know. Dr. Zaks of Moderna, when he got up to make his little TED Talk in 2017, you know, when he said, we've hacked the software of life. And you know these folks, they couldn't wait to try it, right? So how are they going to try it? How are you going to get, you know, to have a sample big enough, basically the world, you know, to take a vaccine, which is not really a vaccine, you know, to be without the usual 10, 15 year process, so you can make your billions in profits right now. Well, you have a pandemic. Okay. See, the pandemic is the answer to the question, how do we market this vaccine this year rather than wait 10 or 15 years through the normal approval process? All right. So you have a pandemic. So the government's running around, right? This is why I think this is part of the cover up. All right. So we knew that the Wuhan lab was the origin of COVID a year ago. I post my Bill Gertz interview. We didn't come right out and say it, but I think it's pretty well, you know, known now. I would say it's a fairly safe bet that Wuhan released the coronavirus. The question is how the coronavirus got there in the first place. I think it got there through gain of function research from our own Dr. Fascist, the genocidal sociopathic vaccine drug pusher. It's getting easier to say the more I say it. It kind of rolls off the tongue really nicely now. You should try it. Make it instinctive. When someone says, Dr. Anthony Fauci, oh, yeah, Dr. Fascist. Yeah, the genocidal sociopathic vaccine drug pusher. Yeah, I know him. Freak out your friends and relatives. All right. So they're saying that's the origin. I'm saying that the origin was actually either here or the Purbright Institute in England, which no one seems to want to talk about, even though it's well known they create coronaviruses and they're funded by Bill and Melinda Gates. Well, probably Bill Gates now. I don't know what Melinda's funding. All right. So the thing is that this is all a marketing campaign. I really believe that the coronavirus goes back to Moderna. Okay. So the origin of SARS-CoV-2, which is COVID-19, the real origin of SARS-CoV-2 is SARS-CoV-1. Okay, that came, you know, a bunch of years ago. All right, so it probably wasn't a big deal to make SARS-CoV-1 into SARS-CoV-2. In fact, according to Judy Mikovits, who was on the show, 82% similarity between SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. So SARS-CoV-2 is like the updated model. You know, so if Cove were a Ford Mustang, you know, 1965 when it came out, this would be like, you know, SARS-CoV-2 would be the 65 and a half. It'd be the half year model. So it's because it'd be 83%, 82% the same, but the, you know, some variations. Okay. So, but like I say, it doesn't, you know, yes, it matters that it's created there, but that's not the real question. The question is not where it was created. The real question is why it was created. Okay. So everybody asked the wrong question. The science of investigating, I'm finding, is not so much, you know, getting the right answers as asking the right questions. Because you can't get the right answers until you ask the right questions. And the right question is, why was this created? I think it was created to market Moderna's messenger RNA new technology. They were so intent on playing with it. There's so much money potential there that they didn't want to wait 10 years. And they said, well, how can we do this, you know, now? How can we get this out there now? How can we, well, you have a pandemic. Okay. So you design a coronavirus that's, you know, really deadly to old people. You know, and pretty lenient on the rest of the world, because one of the byproducts of this is that you're able to kill off the old people. And this is why they gave, I'm speaking really in you know, cold, harsh terms. I'm sorry. I probably should be a little more sensitive, especially if you've lost someone to this, especially since you know, as far as I'm concerned, most of the people that died didn't have to. Okay. Well, we'll get into that later too. So this is the only disease without a cure. First disease in history where nobody ever looked for a cure. All they looked for was a way to prevent it when it's already been prevented. All right. That's the other thing too. Most vaccines come out after a disease has run its course, which makes the vaccines look really good. Because, oh, look, the disease went away. But you can't say that if the disease has already run its course and gone away anyway, like polio. Okay. Some of these other things. Some people will say, oh, no, it was still around. You know, the vaccine stopped it. Well, prove it. Show me. You know, I'm not convinced. You know, polio looks like it was removed by chlorine in swimming pools and good sewage. It's an E. coli bacteria or E. coli virus. So it's, yeah. Chlorine kills it. I know chlorine kills it. Why do you think they put it in swimming pools? You know, have you heard of many cases of polio since chlorine was put in swimming pools? I don't think so. So what's more effective, the polio vaccine or chlorine? I would say the chlorine, you know, because it seems it's a waterborne disease. You get it from water. You get it from being in water with other people who are infected with it through E. coli, basically poop bacteria or viruses. I'm not sure which. I mean, I'm not an expert on that particular stuff, but I'm rambling. Okay, so let's get back to Moderna. So this is where the real origin of all this is, Moderna. You know, and like I say, the article in Children's Health Defense talking about the billions of dollars that you know, Moderna executives have made out this kind of proves that their gamble works. And that also that they're, you know, complete genocidal maniacs themselves, that they're willing to kill any number of people, you know, to advance their product and make their billions. Okay. So so we know, so if you keep focusing on, you know, China and the Wuhan lab of why this was where this was created, you're missing the big picture. All right. So the other big picture, you know, after the money, is the fact that a lot of people died. Now, I don't know the figures are even accurate or not. I would say they're not. I would say a lot fewer people died from COVID than they say died with COVID. It appears, and I've seen several sources on this, that you know, only 6% of the people that the CDC reported to have died with COVID actually died from COVID. So of the 600,000, that would be 10% would be 60,000, 5% would be 30,000, so 6% would be 42,000. I mean, I'm just guessing, all right? 42,000 people actually died from COVID. Well, 42,000 out of a population of 333 million, when 80 to 90,000 people die a year from the flu, is not a problem in the overall grand scheme of things, especially when the mortality rate hasn't changed year to year. You would think that a pandemic would cause a huge spike in the mortality rate. Well, it didn't. Well, that's curious. So was it a labeling thing? Now, why would they do that? Why would they label all these deaths as COVID? What part does that play in the overall grand scheme? Well, it makes you terrified. Okay. Well, what's the purpose of making you terrified? Well, if the disease has no cure, there's only one place you can go. Vaccines. Okay. See, nothing else works. This is what they convince you of. This is part of the mythology. Okay. So you're led to vaccines because nothing else works. Hydroxychloroquine, which we know works, they say doesn't work. Why would the government say hydroxychloroquine doesn't work when they know it does work? Well, because they want you to buy vaccines. Okay. Why would the government want you to buy vaccines? Well, because it makes them rich. Who else does it make rich? The people that own the government, you know, in this case, the health bureaucrats. Big Pharma. Well, we know Big Pharma wants to be rich. So is this just all about money? Yeah, I think a large part of it is about making money, but it's about other things too. It was about getting rid of Trump from office. That's another. See, there's a political aspect to this too. This is a complex issue. When you take all this stuff into account, there's a lot going on here. Okay, so why did they release it, you know, at the beginning of an election year with Trump in office rather than, you know, a couple of years previously? Because Dr. Fauci, you know, announced 9 days before Trump took office in 2017 that he was going to have a major pandemic. Or well, he always couches it in his, you know, his mystical kind of, you know, variable terms. Well, it's likely, possibly, that maybe he might have a major pandemic in his administration. Okay, so he uses the weasel words, but basically he said, yeah, Trump's going to get, you know, screwed. All right, so given that, you know, why did it happen in the year that it did? Well, because it's an election year. Well, why did they want that? Well, Fauci's a Hillary supporter. You know, he sent the Hillary love letters, the emails. Oh, we love you, Hillary. We love what you're doing. And da-da. Okay, so here's the question, too, and I asked this a few days ago. If Hillary, God forbid, if Hillary were president instead of Donald Trump, would the pandemic have come out earlier? I would have said yes. I would say it probably would have come out in, I'd say, early 2018 to make sure it, you know, came out for the midterms. you know, so it had the same effect that it did coming out in 2020 for the 2020 election. All right. So early 2020, this thing hits, you know, so basically, well, it came out actually a little bit earlier. So let's say the earliest was October 2019, which makes it a, you know, that's COVID-19, not COVID-20. So October, November, December, the virus is kind of taking hold. All right. So I'm sure they would have done it 2 years earlier if Hillary, God forbid, were president, because it would gain her more to have it come out in the end of 2017 into 2018, so that the midterms would be swayed exactly the way this election was swayed. They could cheat on that election and guarantee that both houses of Congress went heavily Democrat. So they could have done then what they're doing now, basically screwing us over. It didn't work. So it's fascinating that to think that maybe the total, you know, stealing of the election was planned out by the same people that planned the release of COVID-19. I don't think that's a stretch. Okay. So you see how these things kind of tie in? So there's a lot of things going on. And what did the government gain from this? Well, they learned a bunch of things. They learned that most Americans won't fight for their constitutional rights. Now they are. They're also learning that Americans get to a point where they've had enough. And I think they're kind of worried about that, but we'll see. But they're not really concerned yet. The best you can do, I think, you know, as far as us, is share our show. Share the fact that we write our own legislation. That's going to terrify those people one day. And so I don't know what effect that's going to have, but it's going to be interesting to watch. So something to think about is what you can do to scare the hell out of the deep state. And one of the ways to do that is to share this show, share our legislation, share what we're doing here, and keep on watching, because it's going to get really interesting. All right. So I wrote a little note here in my notes, you know, before when I was kind of like brainstorming, thinking how I want to talk about this stuff. And I said it was a complex issue. I've got removing a popular president, violating constitutional rights, stealing power, generating fear, patenting life forms, killing off old people, replacing them with young illegal aliens, programming your DNA, and advancing dictatorship. I think I pretty much covered that. Anyway, we've got about 3 minutes left in this half hour. Let me play a couple things, and then I shall come back with more. Jim, like I say, is coming up at the top of the hour. So another half hour of fun stuff to talk about. Oh, I'll be taking some breaks and doing some things in there because, you know, I think half an hour. I'm like wired now to do half an hour without really, really slowing down. So let me see if I can. I think the first thing I should play, and this is really exciting, is our new sponsor. Our new sponsor here is Santa Rosa Volunteers. And so rather than tell you about it and spoil the announcement that I made, I'll give you the announcement that I made, and then we're going to start with the program next week. Although I think I'm taking off Memorial Day. So don't expect me here Memorial Day. I'll be doing other stuff. Anyway, let me play this. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. You know, needless to say, I goofed. That's my PSA against the vaccines. I think I'll save what Santa Rosa Volunteers is doing for us until Jim gets here so he can hear it. But it's really encouraging. I'm you know, ecstatic that we have a sponsor now that's sponsoring basically Patriotic Minutes. And so what I'll do with our Patriotic Minutes is I'll take some aspect of our founding documents and say, basically talk about them for a minute. And that would include the Declaration of Independence, you know, all the Federalist Papers, maybe even the Anti-Federalist Papers. I mean, this could go on for quite a while, but these folks want to get the word out. So if you want to contact Santa Rosa Volunteers, that's srv1776.com, srv1776. And that'd be and they've got to their email there and everything else. So yeah, you want to get involved, you know, rise up, sleeping patriots. It's time to get your butts in gear. You know, as I say in my Biden PSA, time to get your butt in gear and save your country. So should I play that one right now? Nah, I think I'll save that one. I've got some time here. So in perusing around, you know me, I'm always looking for new information, different stuff, things that nobody else is talking about. And so what I found here, I found this fact sheet. And this fact sheet is for recipients and caregivers of the emergency use authorization, the EUA, of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine to prevent coronavirus disease, that's what they call it, coronavirus disease, 2019, COVID-19, in individuals 18 years of age and older. Okay, so this is the fact sheet. This is put out, this is the government-required document that's in your Moderna vaccines that I'm sure none of you are reading, okay? But I thought it would be instructive to actually go over this and mention the disclaimer so that you know, you're informed. If you're going to take this, okay, I hope you don't, and I really do. But if you're going to, you should at least read or understand or hear the fact sheet that the government is requiring Moderna to put out on this thing. You know, so there's still some, you know, so still some shred of decency in our government that wants you informed, even as they're giving you something that I think is going to permanently modify your DNA and you'll never be the same again. And that's why I'm not taking it. All right. It says you are, I've got this, I'll put this on Facebook somewhere, but you look it up for yourself. Fact sheet for recipients and caregivers, emergency use authorization, EUA, of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. I mean, just put that in. You'll find it. It's like fda.gov/media/144638/download. That's it. So just go back to the podcast and you'll be able to hear that and you'll be able to find it. It says you are being offered the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine to prevent coronavirus disease 2019 caused by SARS-CoV-2. See, I've been over all that, right? So you understand. This fact sheet contains information to help you understand the risks and benefits of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine, which you may receive because there is currently a pandemic of COVID-19. I tend to disagree. I think the pandemic ended last July. If you look at the stats, and we've been over this a bunch of times, if you look at the original CDC numbers, the COVID, the quote pandemic started at the end of January 2020, spiked April 15th, so that's January, February, March, April, May, June, July. And then 3 months later, by July 4th, it was pretty much gone, and then they started doing the bogus numbers. But you see a dramatic rise from January through April 15th, and then you see a dramatic just as dramatic a fall from April 15th to July 4th. That's the normal course of a pandemic. It rises heavily. The most people get affected. We lose, unfortunately, a bunch of folks, the ones that are most vulnerable to it. It peaks, and then it starts its way back down again. Okay. What they didn't report was that it started its way back down again and was heading for zero last July. All right. So the idea that we're currently in a pandemic is I just don't think it's true. All right. Back to the fact sheet. The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is a vaccine and may prevent you from getting COVID-19. Wait a minute. Did they say may? The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is a vaccine. Well, that's not true either. It's a messenger RNA shot. And may prevent you from getting COVID-19. Okay. So here's what the two biggest myths that I think are governing this operation here is that COVID will kill you and the vaccine will prevent you from getting it. Okay. That is, I think, is really in the mind of most people. COVID, and of course, neither of these are true because a lot of people with vaccines are getting it. In fact, a lot of people, there was a thing on One American News that the CDC has stopped counting the people, who get it, who are vaccinated, all right? They're only counting the people who get it who weren't vaccinated to make the vaccine numbers look better so they can make more money. They can make more money on their patents. They can make Dr. Fascius richer, and they can and make their masters at Big Pharma happier. I mean, that's what's going on here, right? Okay. So anyway, but the fact we say may is just fascinating. The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is a vaccine and may – why do they have to say it's a vaccine? They say the COVID-19 vaccine is a vaccine. Well, is that to counteract those of us who know it's not a vaccine? It's a messenger RNA gene-altering DNA shot. That's what it is. All right. So they've even gone to the lengths here saying that their vaccine is a vaccine. Well, that seems unnecessarily redundant if it were actually true in the first place, which it isn't. That's why they have to say it. And may prevent you from getting COVID-19. Now, here's the kicker. And this is I checked the Pfizer insert. It's the same thing. Same language. I love this line. There is no U.S. Food and Drug Administration, that'd be FDA, approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. It's right there on the fact sheet. There is. Show this to people who are thinking of taking it. Because like I say, once they've had it, it's too late. They've got the DNA modification. They've got the RNA. It's too late. I think massive doses of vitamin C might change it. But once this stuff starts changing your DNA, That's it. There's no going back. This is the problem. And COVID, you can get over, but you'll never get over the vaccine shot. Okay, so this line just staggers me. There is no U.S. Food and Drug Administration FDA approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. Well, if there's no Food and Drug Administration parentheses FDA approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19, why are they requiring everybody to get it? Okay, why are stores saying, well, you don't have to wear a mask. You can buy your constitutional right back to go free face if you have a vaccine. So in other words, they're prescribing medical, technology to you. In other words, if you comply with their fears, then you can walk into their store without a mask. That's what this is about, their fears. They're afraid of people that don't have the vaccination. I'm afraid of people that do. I've got evidence from someone, which is still anecdotal at this point, that people who have had the vaccine are transferring ill effects like secondhand smoke does. Okay, this is a whole new field nobody's even talking about yet. We're on the cutting edge. Okay, we're way beyond everybody else. That's what we do here. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that's what I think is going on. All right, so the fact sheet, read this fact sheet for information about the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Talk to the vaccination provider if you have questions. It is your choice to receive the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Oh, well, that's nice. Okay. So if it's your choice, why are there all these mandates out there? Why are corporations requiring the people to get it? Well, not just this one, but any of them. Why are passports even an issue? Why are some states saying you can't travel, you can't go to restaurants, you can't go here, you can't go there, unless you choose as they tell you to choose? Well, if you have to choose as they tell you, then it's not a choice. It's a mandate. Okay. So the government says right here in the fact sheet, it is your choice to receive the Moderna COVID vaccine. Oh, really? Well, I choose not to. Thank you very much. Next line. The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is administered as a two-dose series, 1 month apart, into the muscle. Well, that's nice. Another great line. The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine may not protect everyone. Okay. Well, does it protect anyone? Then it's got what you should know. I was still in the first paragraph, Okay, let's see if there's anything else here I really want to read. Yeah, they still say, what is the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine? The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine is an unapproved vaccine that may prevent COVID-19. There is no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. Fascinating. The disclaimers are driving me crazy because, if people knew that, I wish they'd state that every day. How come we don't have disclaimers? You know what's interesting about the vaccines? You notice they're not advertised? Okay. Yeah, everybody knows about them because the government's advertising them through talking about them. The CDC, Dr. Fascist talks about vaccinations all the time. Biden talks about them. Everybody talks about them, but nobody advertises them. You don't see, and now from Moderna, the latest messenger RNA technology. You don't see that. Why? Because they'd have to have this disclaimer in there. They'd have to have truth in advertising, or the Federal Trade Commission may or may not go after them. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't. But this is just, if you remember nothing else, remember this. The Moderna, in fact, all of the COVID-19 vaccines are unapproved and that they only may prevent COVID-19. Well, my immunity may prevent it too. Okay. In fact, I'll stake my immunity, my natural immunity, in fact, I'm pretty sure I had it, against their vaccine, their chemical vaccine with the dead fetal tissue and the mercury. And the sugar. Sugar is one of the ingredients, by the way. Don't ask me why, but they put sugar in it. Right? They call it sucrose, but that's sugar. They put antifreeze, fat. God knows what else is in there. Well, it's either propylene or ethylene glycol. I keep forgetting which one's antifreeze and which one's, bourbon. All right. So what you should mention, okay. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why you shouldn't get it. And they mentioned those too. All right. One of the biggest reasons is if you test positive for the antibodies, because you don't need it. All right. That's what Dr. Rand Paul was saying. As head of the Senate there. All right, let me play you some things just because, it gets to a certain point of just chatting on myself that I don't like to make a speech. I'd much rather talk to you. And I got more stuff to do. I think the Orwell piece. Where's my Orwell thing? I got a George Orwell thing. Where did I hide it? I'll find it in a minute. Let's play that. We'll start here. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. To call any show on the Action Radio Network from anywhere in the United States, the number is 215-383-3832. To call any show from outside the United States using Skype, call 011, then 1-215-383-3832. We have many groups within Action Radio which will become laboratories for citizen legislation and serve as a place you can go for more specialized information. From the main Facebook page, Action Radio with Greg Penglis, at facebook.com/radiolegislature, you can check out our Action Radio news group, our vaccine project, the Family Law Project, the Art Project, the Writers Page, the Video Page, our new Student Advocacy Group, and many more groups that are coming soon. Remember, at Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. You're no kidding. Apparently we are in China, because China has either blocked us or dropped us, one or the other. That's a pretty big market. You know, I mean, Xi Jinping, what, you don't listen to your daily Action Radio? Yeah, I'm going to teach your people how to write their own laws. Yeah, watch out. Action Radio is coming. Xi Jinping, you ain't seen nothing yet. All right. So if you all of a sudden find that I'm off the air, the Chinese got to me. Okay. So just let me just put the disclaimer out there right now. In fact, we in the controversial talk show biz do that periodically and say that if anything happens to me, if you ever see a suicide note or any of that kind of nonsense, it's not true. All right. That means that somebody got to me, just like I think they got to Andrew Breitbart. You know, that's always a risk, which I've accepted, because it's more important for me to do something valuable like this than it is to worry about my single life, just because simply I've done a lot of stuff already. I've had a good time. All right. It's been fun. But I think it's much more important at this point to leave something valuable to you and to future generations, a new kind of freedom that has never existed in the world. And that is the ability of regular citizens to not only write the laws that they consent to be governed by, but to believe that they can. And that's a lot of what goes on here. All right. So I found this new website called Deception News. There's so much good information out there. It's really great. You never hear about it. But, you know, we'll take the sources. I will be able to post next week. So if all goes well, the creek don't rise and a bunch of other stuff, my third 30-day suspension from the same post, you know, will let me post on Facebook again. What's going to be cool, though, is I'm going to contact the Attorney General. You know, I've got screenshots of everything. Sorry, Facebook. I've got screenshots of everything. All right. And so I'll be able to turn those into to Ashley Moody's office, Florida Attorney General, see if I can sue the pants off social media, get a bunch of operating capital for Action Radio, bend it against them. Yes. This will be so much fun. All right. So here's an article. This is from May 19th. So not that long ago. J.D. Hayes, H-E-Y-E-S. This is in deception.news, if you want to find them. Merriam-Webster becomes George Orwell's Ministry of Truth propaganda center as dictionary vastly expands definition of, quote, anti-vaxxer to include people who simply don't want the COVID shot. All right. So the world's being divided into vaxxers and anti-vaxxers, all right? Just the way the world was designed into maskers and anti-maskers. See, I didn't like that characterization. It's for the same reason I don't like the characterization of being in Facebook jail. That implies I did something wrong. I'm sure that term came from Facebook. I prefer to call it Facebook political prisoner, which means they did something wrong. And that's exactly what happened. They did something wrong. All right. And even if what I post wasn't, absolutely accurate, I believed it was. It was done in good faith. Same thing they have. And you have a right to be wrong. Okay. That's how it works. Anyway, so we'll talk about that later. But there's a couple of things that are going on here that I find fascinating. Definitions that are changing. All right. I'll get to this definition in just a minute. Herd immunity. All right. Is a definition that has been changed by this pandemic to suit the masters, the big pharma masters. All right. So herd, I don't even like the term herd. I don't like to think of people as a herd, but if you just imagine people as a herd, like bison wandering through the grasslands of America. All right. A certain percentage of that herd is going to be immune to whatever disease is coming by, and they're going to survive, and they're going to pass on that trait to the youngins. And that's how you build immunity, over generations. That's called, adaptation, okay? And that's how immunity is built for whatever disease is out there. That's how animals survive, you know? And plants survive the same way. They build up immunities over generations. All right. So herd immunity used to mean the percentage of people who naturally were immune to a disease, either because they had it or because they're already immune to it or because they were predisposed genetically not to get it in the first place anyway. That's what herd immunity is, okay? That definition was changed by the WHO, the World Health Organization, to say that the herd immunity can only be achieved through vaccination. So that once a certain percentage of the vaccination is, well, percentage of the population is vaccinated, they've now achieved herd immunity. Simply put, that's total BS. That is not true. Yeah, that's the new definition that we're working on in this Orwellian doublespeak world of Dr. Fascist and the government that wants to kill off the old people, make their life easier, save Social Security, import illegal aliens, you know, abort Americans as we live in this brave new strange new world. Okay, so that definition was changed. Vaccine definition was changed by the fact that messenger RNA gene shots that forever alter your DNA by changing the instruction manual to your DNA are being called vaccines when clearly they're not. And we know there's a problem. I just read that from Moderna. Moderna's own fact sheet issued by the company made to be issued, you know, by the government says that the Moderna vaccine is a vaccine. Well, why would they have to tell you that a vaccine is a vaccine if it was a vaccine? All right. That seems to me unnecessarily, ridiculously, repetitively redundant, which is what that just last sentence was. OK, so if it's a vaccine, you don't have to say it's a vaccine when you call it a vaccine. OK, you see what this is? So it really is a messenger RNA gene, you know, altering device. That's what it is. So why don't you say so? All right. Well, because they want to lie to you to convince you it's a vaccine because people think in their heads vaccines will save your life and COVID will kill you. And neither of those things is true. So the two big myths we're operating under is that COVID will kill you and vaccines will save you. And to put it as simply put as possible, those are the myths that are carrying this nonsense forward. All right. So what else changed? Well, the anti-vaxxer definition changed. So let's take a look at what they said about Orwell back to Deception News, deception.news. And this was J.D. Hayes, 519, so May 19th. I'm not sure JD's male or female, so just say they said, for those of you who have read George Orwell's dystopian future classic 1984, you know a couple of things. First, the man was a visionary, and secondly, he was off by maybe a decade or so. Yeah, like 94, 2004. All right, anyway. Without a doubt, many of the things Orwell prophesized about in his book have come true today. We have an all-powerful, all-seeing government apparatus in most civilized nation states. We have less privacy than we've ever had. We have less freedom than we did even 20 years ago, and our news and information centers have become full-fledged propaganda operations in favor of the all-powerful state. That's very true. Here's the latest example, back to the article. In a recently published report, Russia Today noted, that's a great source, Russia Today noted that the dictionary, Merriam-Webster, you know, it's not a Russian dictionary, folks. I think it's either English, American, or both. Anyway, Russia Today discovered this. The dictionary, Merriam-Webster, changed its definition of, quote, anti-vaxxer to now include anyone who simply chooses not to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And this isn't the first time the dictionary has done this. Let's now we get the fine print. Merriam-Webster is again redefining language to fit a narrative, this time framing its definition of anti-vaxxer to include not only – oh, yeah, there is that – oh, here we go. The definition of Merriam-Webster's website says anti-vaxxer means a person who opposes vaccination or laws that mandate vaccination. Wait a minute. So if you want the vaccination but you oppose mandatory laws, you're still called an anti-vaxxer. I wonder how many vaccinated people are anti-vaxxers by this definition. Well, that's kind of interesting. All right. It is not clear when it was written to include opposition to forced jabs, but many observations notice for the first time on Wednesday. So the change in the dictionaries. All right. So the best dictionaries are the ones that were written 100 years ago. And the nice thing about books that I absolutely love is that you can't go in and change the information. So there's not an article I read now that may not have been adapted in some way and changed. I don't know. So you don't know if the information is good. They should say when they've done that, so you don't have to worry about it, but there's no guarantees. So, you know, here it goes. All right, Merriam-Webster Dictionary has changed. I think I read that. It's a pretty short article. All right, should I go more? Ah, here we go. Wait a minute. More. In October, the dictionary company – I'm going to make this bigger so I can read it. Hang on a second. Let me do this. In October, the dictionary company tried to stealth edit its definition of preference by suddenly claiming that it was offensive to reference, you know, someone's sexual preference. Not so surprisingly, the edit was made just as left-wing kook Democrat Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii was accusing then Supreme Court nominee Judge Amy Coney Barrett of being anti-gay after she used the term to be synonymous with sexual orientation. Okay, that's a whole different topic. Yeah, that's what happens when I read without, you know, going over it ahead of time. All right, so definition of anti-vaxxer from Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a person who opposes vaccination or laws that mandate vaccination. That is insane. And the article gives an example. As anti-vaxxers launch a campaign against a bill that would eliminate their ability to opt out of required shots. Wait a minute. Even that's deceptive. Against the bill that would eliminate their ability to opt out of required shots. Well, who says these are required? They're not required. In fact, the government insert from Moderna just said they're not required. It's an option. You know, if you choose the option that the vaccine that they're telling you is a vaccine in order to make sure that you know that it's a vaccine, even if you think it's not a vaccine, because it isn't, you know, so you have a choice. If you choose to do this, understand that A, it's not approved, and B, it only may prevent COVID. I mean, that's what the insert says. That's the government insert. And these folks in the dictionary come along and pick up their own thing here saying that, you know, the ability to opt out of required shots. Well, what makes them required? Well, they're not required. So this definition is a lie. All right. So what they really should say is to launch a campaign against a bill that would eliminate their ability to, I don't know. Why would you eliminate the ability to opt out of required shots? You already have that ability. All right. So what's the bill eliminating? I don't know. None of this makes sense. We're in the illogical world. So you have to buy the basic premise that shots are required, that there's a bill that would say shots aren't required, and that makes you an anti-vaxxer. Huh. Supporters of the proposal are delivering more than 21,000 petition signatures to the office of Senator Ben Allen. Well, that's nice. Okay. So they're even saying if you go against the laws that mandate vaccination, they're going to put you in this nasty little category here. All right. So they demonize you. Once you're demonized, they can do anything to you. Right? Once you're labeled an anti-vaxxer, you know, what if they have forced vaccinations? You know, they're required now, but what if they become forced? Well, it's for your own good. What are you, some kind of anti-vaxxer? What do you mean? You're not going to take the, you know, you have to. I mean, it's just what we do, right? It's required. You know, what if you can't buy food without a vaccination? What if you can't, you know, buy a house or you can't live anywhere? What if you can't pay rent, can't pay your mortgage? What if your bank cancels your mortgage unless you're vaccinated? I mean, where does this end? I'm just making this stuff up now. But if the dictionary can say that, you know, if you're an anti-vaxxer, if you have a campaign against a bill that would eliminate your ability to opt out of required shots when those shots aren't required, when you don't need a bill to opt out because it's your constitutional right to opt out, when all you're doing is launching a campaign for a bill that shouldn't exist, all right, and that makes you an anti-vaxxer that they can do anything to, staggering. Staggering how dangerous all this stuff is. All right. Let me play for you something else. I'm just kind of, you know, going along and playing things. Well, I haven't played my Milton theme for a while. So let me play that. I'll be back with another article for you. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoops Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle,
near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen.
Yeah, I really like this town. Less a little bit of background music there just so I could kind of talk over it. Made that for this town, made it for the city council and the Chamber of Commerce, and there's a lot going on here. This is a fascinating place to be. I've never been in a town watching it develop. You know, so as we get more restaurants, more shops, more crazy hat places, you know, things like that, it's going to be fascinating to see how this goes. All right. So one of the other big myths about COVID-19, the big myth, you know, it's going to kill you. Vaccines can save you. The third big myth is there's no cure. Okay, that's absolutely not true. We know there's a cure. We know when I broadcast March 2nd, and I've said this over and over again, Dr. Raoult in France, in Marseille, France, in the French Virology Institute, you know, proved it. He had a study, then he had another study, and then the second study confirmed what the first study said. Chloroquine, zinc sulfate, and zithromycin for pneumonia. Stop COVID cold. Okay. We've said this before too on the show, that instead of the 15 days to slow the spread, which seems kind of, you know, a very low ambitious thing to do, 15 days to stop it cold with hydroxychloroquine would have been a whole lot better. So for the cost of $10 to $20 per person, depending on how much, you know, you're supposed to take for a preventive, you know, course of hydroxychloroquine, we could have stopped the pandemic before it became one. We could have stopped it back, you know, March 15th, to April 1st. Yeah. So 2 weeks, 2 weeks of hydroxychloroquine, and there would be no pandemic. There would be no, you know, there would be no COVID-19. It'd be gone because it would have killed it, everybody, right? You know, so we could have saved ourselves that. So why didn't we? Well, because the government and the fascists wanted to sell vaccines. Okay. So you see how everything leads back to vaccines, all right? So you take a look at this. So part of the complex puzzle is that you could not have a cure because that would have ruined all the plans of Moderna and Dr. Fascist patenting their life forms and Big Pharma making their billions. You know, if you had a cure, there'd be no reason for vaccines. Well, the problem with the cure is it's cheap and it's already been approved. So you can't patent it. You can't patent hydroxychloroquine because it's 60 years old. All right. So they can't patent the cure. They can't make money off the cure. They can't do anything with the cure. And the cure stops them from selling vaccines, which they can make billions on. So here you are funding, you know, these vaccines that are messenger RNA gene shots for a disease that probably left us months ago, like back in July. I mean, Dr. Peter McCullough confirmed in front of Congress that the strain of COVID, the one that came to Wuhan, you know, the one they say you know, all the things they say about it, all right, that particular strain of the virus is gone. You know, it left months ago. And yet that's the one they're making the vaccines for. So not only do you have vaccines, you know, that are ineffective, they're for the wrong virus. Because the virus they're made for doesn't exist in this country anymore. It's gone. It's already run its course, probably by the end of July. So there's 14 other variants, according to Dr. McCullough, that are running around the country, and those are the ones that are affecting people. Well, because they're new. So we haven't had a chance to get our immunity, but I guess most of us are. Otherwise, we'd all be dropping dead, but we're not. So why aren't we dropping dead? Well, because we're developing immunity. You know, so there's a lot of folks developing immunity to new forms of the virus because new forms are coming out all the time. Apparently, with 14 viruses, we've got, you know, 14 types of new immunity. That's pretty cool. Okay. And yet that's not being talked about. Right? Why? Because they want to sell vaccines. See, everything leads back to selling vaccines. I mean, I keep saying it, but it's true. All right. So I found an article in NE, I guess that's Northeast News Now. And this would be Brian Fisher, Monday, April 27th, 2020. So, again, I have my archives now. The best articles of COVID were in the first few months of it. Those are the most accurate. So what this person here, Brian Fisher, points out in April 27th of 2020, that Fauci, Dr. Fascist, knew about hydroxychloroquine back in 2005. And his subheading, nobody needed to die. Okay, that's what Dr. Zelenko has said. That's what a lot of folks have said. You know, well, I mean, obviously some people were going to die of this, but in numbers so small compared to the amount of people who have, and we don't even know how many people who have because they lie about the numbers, all right? But the thing is that hydroxychloroquine cures COVID. So if you have a cure, you don't need vaccines. If you don't need vaccines, you don't need warp speed. If you don't need warp speed, you don't need patents. You don't need new life forms. You don't need experiments. You don't need a declaration of emergency. You don't need an EUA for vaccines. You don't need any of that stuff because you got a cure. If you have a cure, they don't make money. Oh. Now do you understand? Let me get to the article. I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's right there. The article says Dr. Anthony Fauci, whose expert, in quotation marks, advice to President Trump has resulted in the complete shutdown of the greatest economic engine in world history, that would be the United States, has known since 2005 that chloroquine is an effective inhibitor of coronaviruses. Let me try that one again. Dr. Anthony Fauci, whose expert advice to President Trump has resulted in the complete shutdown of the greatest economic engine in world history, has known since 2005 that chloroquine is an effective inhibitor of coronaviruses. That makes Dr. Fascist a liar, a compulsive liar, a sociopathic, psychopathic liar, a genocidal, you know, drug pusher. I mean, now do you understand why I say this? Okay, because he knew in 2005 that there never had to be a pandemic. And yet he did everything to make sure one happened. And he brought fear into your life with masks. And he brought fear into your life with lockdowns. And more people died from the masks and lockdowns than ever died from COVID, especially when you consider only 6% of the people actually died from COVID of the 100% reported. Because 94% died with COVID. So this is what's going on. This is just another fact, another facet of this, is that the cure was known. The person responsible for the greatest expert in the United States on infectious diseases knew about it in 2005. So he knew 15 years ago that chloroquine, Jim's on the line. We get a couple more things here. How did he know this? Back to the article in NE News Now by Brian Fisher. Monday, April 27th, 2020. How did he know this? Because of research done by the National Institutes of Health, that's the NIH, of which he is a director. Surprise, surprise. In connection with the SARS outbreak caused by a coronavirus dubbed SARS-CoV. Actually, I think it probably became Pro-CoV-1 because the one we have now is CoV-2. The NIH researched chloroquine and concluded that it was effective at stopping the SARS coronavirus in its tracks. The COVID-19 bug is likewise a coronavirus labeled SARS-CoV-2, while not exactly the same as the SARS-CoV-1. Yeah, it's like 82% similar, though. It is genetically related to it and share 79% of the genome. Okay, I was off by 3%. Not bad, though. 79% of the genome, as the name SARS-CoV-2 implies. They both use the same host cell receptor, which is what viruses use to gain entry to the cell and infect the victim. The Virology Journal, the official publication of Dr. Fascist, National Institutes of Health, published what is now a blockbuster article on August 22nd, 2005, under the heading, Get Ready for This. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS, coronavirus, infection, and spread. Right, the researchers write, we report that chloroquine has strong antiviral effects on SARS-CoV, infection of primate cells. This inhibitory effects are observed when the cells are treated with the drug either before or after exposure to the virus, suggesting both prophylactic and therapeutic advantage. Okay? So prophylactic prevents it beforehand, therapeutic does so afterwards. Let's see if I can click on the blockbuster article. See if I get it. Hopefully I will. We'll find out. Ooh, I think I found the blockbuster article. All right, so I'll have to save that. I'll save that. I'll see if that's Jim on the line. Let me take a look at my numbers here real quick. Yep, that's him. I have listings for everybody's number. Don't mind me. I'm exhausted today, so I'm just kind of rambling incoherently. All right, let's play Jim's theme, and then let's talk guns. This will be fun. I need a break anyway. I'll be right back. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dykes with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Oh, great timing. I was just about to run out of gas here. I'm tired. I've been working hard. You know, we got a new sponsor.
I can't believe you never run out of gas.
Well, no, I'm just, you know, low on the tank. Despite my efforts at breakfast, the most important meal of the day. No, I was busy all last Saturday. We had a huge rally here. We had the Arise USA. We had the Faith, Freedom, and Family rally. They sort of combined together. We've got a new sponsor here. In fact, before we get going, let me play that for you, too. Just to let you know, Santa Rosa Volunteers, they've commissioned me to do these patriotic minutes. So feel free. Every day we're going to – well, I'll do a different one each week.
But I'll be able to pick something from Declaration. Well, let me play it for you. It probably makes more sense if I just actually do that instead of rambling on here incoherently. Where is it? Here we go. Be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com, srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. Yeah, so this is very cool. We have a new sponsor. Things are looking good, and I'm excited. I'm really excited about this. So we shall move on from there. The next ones will be a little shorter. That I actually had two versions of America the Beautiful going on there. So how are you, sir? What's happening with you? And you got some plans this weekend? You're going to take it easy? Going to hit the shooting range? What you doing?
I am doing very well, as always, and I am not going to go shooting this weekend just because I would imagine that every range that I would go to will be packed with people. So
I'm
going to wait until everyone else clears out. But yeah, I'll definitely be relaxing on the weekend and remembering, you know, some certain individuals, since it is Memorial Day. And so, you know, it's a time to honor those who fell in defense of our country. So definitely be thinking
we
about
lose that
years,
so much. I probably should have started with that too, because, you know, I remember when I first got to this country, I'm a teenager, you know, and I'm here, and we have a band director who served in World War II. He was a radio operator in the Pacific, and he was also a jazz musician. So he studied music after he got back from the war. But we always knew about Pearl Harbor Day. We marched in the holidays, Veterans Day, Memorial Day. We go to the cemeteries. We'd hear the reading of the names of the fallen from our town. And this was Lexington, Massachusetts. You know, so this was you know, a town that was where it all began, right? Even though they've kind of lost their way now. But that was really important to me in a new country, to see that this country, you know, honored those who had fallen to protect liberty. And it sort of began my study of, well, what's this liberty thing all about? Because, you know, I come from, you know, British Commonwealth countries, you know, Canada and Australia before that. So we've lost some of that. We've lost a lot of it in used car sales and, you know, barbecues. And it's you know, as a veteran, that might be something for you just to kind of comment on. Do you think, is there a way that we should be restoring this, or what do you think we should be doing here?
Well, I would definitely like to see, you know, people discussing at home and schools discussing the meaning of Memorial Day and why it's so important. You know, I don't have a problem with the sales and the picnics and everything, you know, because while it is a somber occasion and it's celebrating or recognizing something that's very, very somber, the people who gave their life for this country, I think we should spend the weekend celebrating the way they lived their lives and what they did. So I'm okay with celebrating. You know, I don't think funerals need to always be sad things either. I just hope people will remember why they're going out and celebrating.
Yeah, and the whole purpose of what they gave their lives for is for the freedoms, for us to enjoy the freedom. And this
exactly.
is why I feel... Yeah, and I feel sort of a duty, you know, with what we do at Action Radio to sort of to push, you know, there's many ways to fight for freedom. The freedom that they gave me allows me to bring about a whole new level of freedom that people hadn't even thought of until now. You know, the idea that citizens can write the legislation by which they are governed is a revolutionary concept. That concept would not exist if the founders hadn't done what they did, if the soldiers throughout our history hadn't done what they did, you know, and here we are, you know. So we need to keep going with this grand and glorious experiment. And one of the ways we do that is preserving our Second Amendment, if I may segue into that at this time, because I don't know how much time you have. But one of the things that our veterans fought for and our soldiers fought for and died for is the right that we could arm ourselves against a tyrannical government. And yet, yeah. Who's going to run the ATF now?
and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do want to start with something that I promised you last week and
okay.
something that I think is very timely since so many people are going to be having barbecues and stuffing their face this weekend and then next week deciding that maybe it's time to work out and get rid of all those calories that they consumed over the weekend.
Yeah.
So we talked last week about talking about how to conceal carry while exercising.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Thank
I'd
you for remembering
start
that.
Off with that.
Okay.
Sure. So the first thing, you know, that I think we probably need to talk about is the fact that if you're going to carry concealed while you're exercising, it's going to be important that you're carrying a small, fairly lightweight firearm. So,
examples.
It's going to be
for the
so
new folks.
Some examples. And I'm a person who has often said that I don't carry personally anything smaller than a 9mm. And mm-hmm. I would not advocate for anyone to carry anything smaller than a 380. Having said that, there's always an exception to the rule. So I'll tell you a firearm that might be an exception to my 380 rule while we're going through. But
sure,
any really reliable 9mm subcompact 9mm or a small 380. If you have the right rounds. So there are some very, very good self-defense rounds for a 380. So if you choose one of those, I think a 380 could be a good choice. So a couple of examples, and you know, don't everyone call in and tell me that I'm forgetting your favorite firearm, because there are many, many possibilities you could use.
But go on forever.
Just a couple
yeah.
of examples. The Glock G42 or G43, would be great. There's single stack Glock. The G42 is a 380. The G43 is a 9mm. Both very small, very slim.
About the same size, aren't they?
What's that?
They're about the same size, aren't they? Same dimensions?
They're
slightly
close,
different.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're very, very close. And so either one of those I think would do well. The Ruger LCP or LC9. Another 380 and 9mm that's even smaller than the Glock, very easy to conceal, would be a good choice. And then my exception to the rule of carrying anything smaller than a 380, and just an interesting choice if you're looking for something small to carry, is the Ruger LCR in 327 Magnum. So the LCR
that's interesting.
Is actually a revolver, a very small revolver, and
okay.
it fires the 327 Magnum, which think of a 357 Magnum, but just a little bit smaller. So it will be a significant emotional event when you fire it out of that really small Ruger LCR. But if you can handle
let me translate that for you folks in blunt language. It's going to be loud as hell, and it's going to rock your hand. There's a big myth, and new shooters, we can talk about this for a second too, that the new shooters think that small guns have less recoil, and just the opposite is true. Right?
Right. Yeah, the smaller, lighter guns, because they have less mass, typically result in much more felt recoil when you fire them. And like you said, a 327 Magnum round, it's definitely going to have a lot of recoil. It's definitely going to be loud, and there's going to be a huge fireball that comes out of the end of the barrel when you pull the trigger. So
see, to me, that's a waste.
It will be an emotional event.
Yeah, that's a waste. Unless you're trying to scare somebody to death, you know, that seems to me a huge amount of wasted powder and noise. And one of the things we've talked about before, too, I think Anthony and I talked about this several times, is that the hearing damage. You know, you're trading your hearing loss to save your life. And I think most people would make that trade. As a musician, I don't want to unless I absolutely have to, but I would do it if I absolutely have to. But I think there must be a way, you know, without the suppressors and things we have now, are there ways to make smaller guns quieter? Like with powder or subsonic rounds?
The problem you run into is as you start making those smaller firearms quieter, you're making them less effective. So as you put less powder in, you know, you're getting less velocity on that round that's coming out. And, you know, velocity and mass are the two big things that you're looking at when you're looking at how effective, and then expansion as well. So, you know, you've got to have enough velocity and mass to make a difference when it hits your target. And then you've got to have enough velocity and the right bullet design that when the bullet hits the target, it's going to expand effectively. And that does a few things. It makes a larger wound cavity. It slows the bullet down enough that it stays inside the body of the person you're shooting at, because you don't want it to pass through them and hit someone inadvertently that's behind them. And when the round expands, it typically expands out with sharp metal wings, for lack of a better term. So you have a large cutting instrument that's going through, making it much more likely that it's going to hit a vital organ or an artery.
Here we can get so graphic in the morning. Yeah, it's we're talking about firearms. I mean, this is what they're designed to do. And so the question I have, you know, getting back to our exercise theme, is, you know, what kind of dangers you might face. You know, for me, if I become a huge celebrity, you know, I'm going to be in danger all the time simply because I'm a huge celebrity. I mean, it's possible. I'm thinking, where am I going to go that I'm in, you know, the gym, jogging, bike riding, things like that, you know, where I might have clothing that's not really conducive to carrying a firearm, unless, of course, we get open carry. I don't know if I'd open carry in the gym. That might be a little – we'll have to talk about that. But the other thing is jogging out in nature, trails, animals, you know, all kinds of things might be out there. And people think, well, I'm in my light clothing. It's not going to be comfortable. It's not going to look good. How do people adapt to different kinds of clothing? And what of holsters and gear do they have? Are they going to need to be able to do this?
Yeah, so there are a lot of options out there. And some of the options are going to vary depending on what you're doing. So, for example, if you're out walking or jogging, there are compression shorts and compression shirts that have built-in holsters in them.
Interesting.
I tend to lean more towards the shorts because a shirt, even with a lightweight firearm, is going to hang awkwardly. A pair of compression shorts with a built-in kind of elastic holster into them can make it pretty easy to conceal carry, especially if you wear a loose-fitting T-shirt over it. And then the compression shorts are usually moisture-wicking, which helps out a lot. In fact, no matter how you're carrying, I would recommend wearing a compression garment underneath your shorts or your shirt, wherever you're carrying, just as a barrier between your firearm and your body, because you're going to perspire and perspiration is not good for firearms. You're going to have to clean it anyway, but it's going to be much more difficult to clean if you don't have some barrier between you and your body. So definitely look at that. The other thing, if you're hiking or running, that you can do is you can carry a fanny pack with you that has a holster incorporated into it, or you have a pocket holster with your firearm in it. So that makes it very easy to carry kind of off body. You could also use a sling pack, which kind of slings over one shoulder. The great thing about that is there are sling packs that are hydration carriers that you could have a hydration bladder in it so that you have water, but you can quickly flip it around from your back to your front and have a firearm readily available for you. So those are kind of interesting to use as well. And then if you're going to do bike riding, you could do fanny pack or a sling pack. You could also use a chest rig. So imagine like you see in the old gangster movies where you have the FBI agent with a firearm underneath his armpit. You could wear a chest rig.
James
Bond.
James Bond had something
covering it, so it makes it a little more difficult to draw.
But he had a Walther PPK and that blue stretch weird little holster contraption they gave. Did they make that for him, or is that actually regular gear?
I have no idea. That is a good question. I have.
We'll do
no
guns in the movies next time. That's a whole other, because they have guns in the movies that don't need reloading. It's fascinating. It's amazing what they can do. Yeah.
Right, the last one, and one that is probably the easiest and most ubiquitous for exercising, is a belly band. So a belly band is basically an elastic material that uses either Velcro or rare earth magnets to be able to adjust it to hold it tight against your skin, and it has a holster incorporated into it. So it basically wraps around your stomach or your lower chest and has a holster incorporated into it so that you can carry there. And then there are even some exercise belts that don't have an incorporated holster that have rare earth magnets that are so strong that they would actually hold your firearm in place even without the built-in holster, although I would much prefer a belly band that has an incorporated holster, unless you're going to carry a firearm that's on safe and you have a lot of training with it and know exactly what you're doing with it. I don't like unholstered weapons being on my body because there's too many bad things that can happen.
Yeah, they bounce around. They catch on things. You know, there's a reason that holsters have been around for a long time. I think it'd be interesting if we got to the point where open carry was acceptable enough. And I wonder in the constitutional carry states, do people walk in with a small gun and a small holster on their gym shorts and just go about their elliptical machine and their track and their, you know, and then do some weights and free weights and say, hey, how you doing, pal? I'm doing fine. What are you carrying? Oh, I got this one. What do you got? You know, I mean, that's where I want to get to in this country. At least I hope so.
Yeah, the problem with most gym shorts is usually it's a small elastic waistband, maybe with a drawstring.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to support the weight of a loaded firearm on something like that without it pulling down or trying to fold out. It gets to be a challenge. If you get into something like an MMA-type short that has a much more substantial kind of waistband on it, you might be able to there with a lighter handgun. And then I've actually known people who would wear a nylon belt underneath their clothing. So they would have a nylon belt just around their body, not necessarily around their shorts, and have a firearm attached to the nylon belt and then have a shirt over it. But there are a lot of things you can do. The challenge is always going to be, even in open carry states, is most states allow homeowners and business owners to not permit you to come in or to ask you to leave if you have a firearm. So you're always running the risk that you're going to go into an anti-gun gym and be ready to work out and then have someone from management come over and tell you you have to leave.
Yeah, but in a state like Florida, it's not prohibited, just like churches aren't prohibited in a bunch of places. I think sitting in a bar is one of the few places. Yeah,
right. It is not prohibited. However, if you are told to leave, you must leave. And if you don't leave after you've been asked to leave, you've committed a felony. You've committed armed trespassing.
Right. We don't want to do that. Okay. I think the biggest problem, like most concealed carry things, is the embarrassment of having your gun like fall out of a holster, you know, when you're hanging suspended by something. It's like, you know, oops. So this is what I worry about. It's like when I first started carrying, you know, and one of my very first days, I went to my bank, and of course, the armored car's out front, right, with all the cash, and the guys are right there. I'm walking by, hey, guys, you know, I'm thinking to myself, oh, God, what am I doing here? I still have the California mentality, right? It's a, so these are the, I think that what people really worry about is, I mean, they want to carry just because the danger is out there, and that's very real, but I think much more real is the unintentional disclosure of their firearm, and so that's why I thought Jim, you know, it would be an interesting topic to cover. Do you ever see this one? So they have this below the belt thing. You've got to pull this flap up and do all this complex stuff. Are those gimmicky or do those things actually work? Oh, some of the variations beyond a fixed holster. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about now.
Oh, okay. This is one. It has like a flap over your belt and you sort of pull it. It actually rides, you know, on on top of your leg kind of thing.
Yeah, I've actually seen videos and things of them. I've never actually – I would not want to give an opinion on it.
Okay.
Another interesting one for ladies is they actually make a concealed carry brassiere for women. And I've only seen ads for that, but I always thought that was interesting.
Why didn't you
actually
try one, Jim?
I mean, I'd still like to see one just so I could see exactly how the holster is incorporated into it.
Of course.
Not sure of the comfort
scientific
that
curiosity,
involved
right?
in it and things like that. But yeah, it's an interesting concept. So, you know, if anyone has used one of those, I would love to hear what your opinion was on it.
We need Amanda back here. We'll have to get her on gym wear for women. That'd be kind of cool. I've got a mystery caller here. Obviously, I took this call once before. You're on my list of callers, but you didn't identify yourself. So I'm going to put you on hold for just a few more minutes because I know Jim's going to have to leave in a little bit, and then I'll get you on the air. So where should we go now? We've got to, I don't know how much time you have. We've got the rest of the show, so feel free.
Yeah, I've got to jump off. In about 5 minutes, but since you talked about the nominee for ATF director,
oh God,
one of the interesting things for me is going to see what Joe Manchin ends up doing during this confirmation process, because as you know, the Senate is equally divided. So in order to get this nominee confirmed, the Biden administration is going to need every Democrat to vote in favor of confirmation, or they're going to have to get one or more Republicans to cross over and vote to confirm. And
well, they could filibuster this. I mean, this is not a reconciliation vote, not that the stimulus one was, but they snuck it through on that. But there's no reconciliation. There's no budget. There's no budget act that this is a part of. So it could be filibustered indefinitely. They'd have to have 60 votes, I would think, unless the gelding party is not living up to my lowest expectations.
Or if they change the rules of the Senate.
Well.
Just like they did for judges. I mean, it would be very simple for them to do a simple parliamentary vote and change the rules of the Senate to eliminate the filibuster for cabinet nominees.
I like the filibuster. In fact, I'd make all votes 60 votes in the Senate, but that's just me. Actually, I'd make them 66. I think 2/3 will get better decisions. But Greg, a lot less will be done. Exactly. Thank you. You're catching on.
Yeah.
So but, feel free.
Well, the challenge is lot of things we want undone wouldn't be able to be undone too. So there's always the two sides of the coin. But I agree with you.
You always do this to me. He always does this to me.
Yeah.
If you're listening, if anybody's going to counteract me with perfectly logical, straightforward, wonderful arguments, it's going to be Jim. I mean, this is why I look forward to our chats. All right.
Go ahead. I still agree with you that I think the filibuster is important and should have remained in place, you know, even though it does make it more difficult to undo the bad things. But the thing that I'm really watching for as these votes go forward is to see if the Democrats can convince either Murkowski or Collins to go along to confirm this director for the ATF. Because if they do so, they can protect Manchin, and he will not have to vote.
I think if he
votes for this ATF director, he's going to have huge problems back in West Virginia. And I think the Democrats will do everything that they can to try to protect him from having to cast that vote.
Hmm. Yeah, and that should be well known too. But I've got my opinion on this guy. I should probably let you get your opinion on first, because you know what I'm going to say. Anyway, feel free. Jim, what's your take on our new proposed ATF director?
Oh, he's terrible. I mean, he's worked for the Giffords organization. He is vehemently anti-gun and has been for a long time. Even when he was previously with the ATF, he was vehemently anti-gun. And he is definitely exactly the person that Bloomberg and anti-gun groups would want to have in the ATF director's chair.
Yeah. So my question then is, why hasn't a single Republican, maybe I'm just being rhetorical here, why hasn't a single Republican gotten up? And even though they've questioned him a little bit, I've heard Mike Lee, and I've heard Ted Cruz, and I've heard some of the other folks, I think it was Senator Kennedy, Louisiana, saying, you know, define an assault weapon. But not one of them has said, you've automatically disqualified yourself for even calling for a ban, because that means you don't understand the Second Amendment. And the ban that we had back in the Clinton administration was obviously unconstitutional, despite the fact the Supreme Court didn't, you know, overrule it like they should have. You know, I said, but you know, what is this belief you have that the people don't have a right to, you know, to keep and bear arms without infringement? And this is the same guy that says he was issued an AR-15 and a SWAT team. So what he's really saying, not only is he saying the Second Amendment doesn't apply to the people like it says it does, but he actually believes in the Second Amendment in reverse, because he says the government should be able to have any government, any gun that they want, and the people can't. The government can limit the people, which I see all the time. And so I would say, dude, you've just disqualified yourself. You cannot swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution, given the fact that you want to ban guns, and the Constitution is clearly against that. And you also have disqualified yourself by saying that you believe that the government can have all these guns that you say the people can't have. You know, on those two grounds, I would say, look, you're disqualified. You need to go home. You need to just give up. Just get out of here. I mean, if someone had been just that blatant, it wouldn't happen, of course. It's still Democrats would go, oh, no, he's wonderful. You can't ban this. You don't understand the Second Amendment, yada, yada, yada. But at least if they said it that definitively, that you've disqualified yourself because you violated the Second Amendment, you don't understand that the people have the right to keep and bear, own and carry any firearm they choose. You don't understand what it's like to – you don't understand your own government, and you're going to run the agency that is going to be regulating these things? You know, that's how I put it.
Yeah, and I think you may hear some of the senators make those statements after or when it comes time to vote. You're very seldom going to hear any senator during hearings making a statement that they've already reached a decision on how they're going to vote before the hearings are concluded.
Hmm. Well, let me frame it in the form of a question then. You know, do you believe?
Yeah, they want to make it at least appear that they are open to the confirmation process and that they are willing to listen to the nominee state their opinions. I think, as you mentioned, Senator Lee and some of the other senators have been very, very pointed in the questions that they've asked and have clearly shown that for anyone who understands the Constitution, this is someone who should not be confirmed to this position.
Well, he's disqualified himself,
but
as far as I can see.
Right,
you know, just by his opinion.
I think as often the case, you will find virtually all Democrats will vote for him. Virtually all Republicans will vote against him. And there will be maybe four or five senators that are going to be the ones who this confirmation hearing is really directed at.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds pretty normal. It's always the one or two in the middle that the sway it. Well, you know, I still contend if the Republicans had any gonads at all, they would be screaming and yelling and saying, look, the Senate is not equally balanced. You've got 50 Republicans, 48 Democrats, and two independents. Therefore, we're the majority. That's what they should have done. You know, they also could have said Kamala Harris is not a member of the Senate. Therefore, at least we should have joint committees. You know, the Democrats should not be able to rule any committee. simply because, you know, they don't have a majority, because the vice president only comes in, and she's not even the vice president, but that's another story. But the vice president only comes in when there's a tie. The vice president is not part of the Senate unless called in out of necessity. But in terms of the regular order of business, they're not there. So therefore, the committees, if the Senate split equally, then they should be, you know, the committee should be split equally too. That's how I do it. But they're not fighting for that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And I'm okay with that as long as you would also agree if there was a Republican president and vice president and the Senate mm-hmm. was evenly divided, that there should be no Republican majorities on any committees.
Of course not. No, they have joint committee chairs and equal members. Yeah, yeah. But I would still say that if you've got two independents, I don't care I don't give a damn who they caucus with. That doesn't mean anything. If they're registered as independents, then they're independents. Okay, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have your independents and be a Democrat too. Okay, so therefore they need to declare.
You can.
well, that's the problem. Yeah, but I would see, like I say, the gelding old party, the GOP. The geldings in the GOP have decided that they don't understand anything, and that's the problem.
Yeah,
gutless.
No, I agree.
Gelding. Yeah.
And I actually do
He's
have to run off. I've got another commitment, so
okay.
I will let you continue this with whoever the caller is that you've been sitting on hold. I'm sure that he or
they
she
left.
Would like to weigh in. So.
Oh, okay. Laugh. Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, well, you know, I mean, I keep a growing list. It's going to get huge once the show gets a lot bigger. But just to make sure that, you know, the obscene callers, I don't want them again, you know. And so when my producer comes on here in a few weeks, we're going to maintain a very large and quick list that people can refer to very quickly so that we know who's there. And if you're a nice caller, we're going to get you on. If you're a pain in the butt, you're going to sit on hold for a while, maybe indefinitely,
right.
You know, so until you get the message. All right. Anyway, thank you, sir. Have a wonderful weekend.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you. Yeah, it always is. I mean, it really, you know, I love the arguments you bring. You know, you're the most agreeable person to disagree with I've ever met. So it's really kind of cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you,
Thanks,
sir.
Thanks, Greg.
There you go. All right. Jim Dykes is the director of Florida Carry, dedicated to open carry. I'm going to try and play something here. The last time I played this, it didn't work out that well. And if it's a bad recording, I'll just have to replace it. But it's one of my favorite songs, and it seems apropos on this Memorial Weekend Eve. went rather well, so it looks like the recording is fine. I think what happens is sometimes when I'm playing with different pages and looking up stuff, that it interferes with my listening of it, but it actually might be going out over the air just fine, which is a good thing. All right, this is not what I wanted to look at. I've got several articles here. Again, you want to call in 215-383-3832. Feel free to join me. What I find some of the most interesting are these articles I'm discovering and rediscovering. I've started a big file on it, on articles that were written early in the alleged pandemic that didn't have to happen because of hydroxychloroquine. Okay. Oh, just to let you know how it works, hydroxychloroquine destroys the protein wall of a virus. Zinc sulfate goes in and kills the actual genetic material, prevents it from replicating. That's how it works. All right. That's why they're so effective. Azithromycin, the third part of the Zelenko protocol, prevents you from getting pneumonia and other bacterial infections, as you're already in your weakened immune state because of COVID. So that's how it works. It's pretty good stuff. All right. So I found something written by Michelle Malkin, who I actually met in Washington back in 2017 when I went to one of my first and last conferences. We'll get there again, but she was really cool. Anyway, I hope to get her on the show again at some point. But this is Real Clear Politics, Michelle Malkin, early in the pandemic. This was, let me see if I can find it here. Give me date. Oh, come on, folks. Sorry. March 11th. Sway over to the side. March 11th, 2020. So March 11th, this is 4 days before the 15 days to slow the spread, which should have been 15 days to end it with hydroxychloroquine, but it wasn't. So right before the very first, needless lockdown that the president had because of his needless declaration of emergency for the needless pandemic, Michelle Malkin wrote, "I think I'm where most sane people are on the coronavirus outbreak. Concerned, but not panicked. Calm, but not apathetic. Taking reasonable precautions, but remaining skeptical of what all the purportedly, quote, best experts here in the United States are telling us about every aspect of their belated crisis management and response, especially on their pimping of vaccine development to prevent the disease." That's fascinating. So the problem with the vaccines was that, this is why I know this is all about vaccines, because they talked about it before the pandemic had even really gotten going. That's the fascinating thing about this. The vaccine stuff was already, the Moderna stuff was already, all these other things. President Trump thinks that warp speed, all of a sudden he went out there and said, "Oh, please create a vaccine for me." No, they already had them ready to go. They had them ready to go before the virus. In fact, they had them ready to go so they knew how to create the virus. This is how all this works, okay? It's a fascinating story. It's also incredibly dangerous, and we have to do a lot about it. And there's a staggering amount of ignorance about it. But this is how I see it. Back to the article. Here are some plain non-hysterical facts. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, the U.S. centers, I guess they call it plural. The U.S. Center for Disease Control is a bloated federal government agency with a long history of incompetence, fraud, secrecy, mission creep, and shady alliances with both social justice causes on the left and private corporations on the big business right. That would be big pharma, right? The, quote, deep state of entrenched bureaucrats embedded in the Beltway bowels is alive and thriving at the CDC. The unelected elites who've occupied top offices at the public health industrial complex are hostile to public scrutiny while clamoring for ever ballooning budgets. Their recommendations have often been detrimental to citizens' well-being and freedom. Yeah, so in other words, they're not here to help you. as much as government isn't here to help you, these folks really aren't here to help you. They're here to help big pharma and their patents and their money. All right, back to Michelle. She says, and yes, many of the scientists who work there are rabidly anti-conservative and anti-Trump. Yeah, no kidding. Remember when they did the gun studies? They want to say that owning a gun was a mental disease that the CDC should study. I mean, in fact, the Congress had to prevent money going to the CDC for studying that, gun owners are mentally deranged. I think that law still exists. At least I hope so. Back to the article. It's a brazen lie that President Donald Trump slashed CDC funding, which is being used as an excuse for the agency's coronavirus unpreparedness. Oh, there we go. Cognitively, no, they weren't unprepared. They were completely prepared. They were prepared for vaccines. They were prepared to terrorize you. They were prepared for a lot of people to die so they could sell vaccines. That's what they were prepared for. They were not prepared to stop it with hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, and the other drugs that would have stopped it cold. They were not prepared for that because they didn't want to stop it. You had to have the pandemic to have the emergency declaration, which led to the emergency use authorization, which led to the vaccines being authorized, but not approved. You with me? You see how all this works? It's, again, it is a fascinating story. All right, more from Michelle. She says that nearly $7 billion, CDC's annual budget is more than 200% larger than it was, you know, two decades ago. On top of that, a shady big business lobbying group called Corporate Friends of CDC, oh, isn't that interesting, have raised hundreds of millions of supplemental dollars. Oh, boy, where'd that all go? Gain-of-function research? I don't know. Which raises serious conflict of interest issues. In 2007, Senator Tom Coburn, fiscal audit of the agency discovered vulgar expenditures, including CDC syphilis prevention funds spent to host a, quote, safe sex event with a porn star. Well, that's interesting. CDC HIV AIDS prevention funds spent on a transgender beauty pageant, and $45 million in CDC funding spent on conferences featuring prostitutes, protests, and beach parties. That's your CDC, okay? Did you hear about any of this play? No, of course not. It's all been suppressed. This would be labeled false information if it came out today. All right. Despite the flood of money, Michelle Malkin says, the agency has been caught flat-footed on outbreak after outbreak. They squander untold millions on other health threats in favor of pushing gun control and nanny state hobby horses. You know, TV violence, helmet laws, video games, and bullying campaigns, and explicit sex education, for example. CDC has one primary job, disease control, but has managed to botch it without ever learning from the past failures. Let me remind you some of the CDC's long history of royal screw-ups. Okay, this is something you all need to know. This is something you should be sharing with your friends. I'll put this on Facebook. But you need to know that the people that are telling you what to do have no idea what to do, unless they do have an idea what to do, and it's something really nefarious. All right. Article says the notorious 1976 swine flu vaccine scandal was catalyzed by mass hysteria whipped up by the CDC junk scientists clamoring for more money. Congress obliged, and nearly 45 million Americans were unnecessarily jabbed with a vaccine for a disease that had fizzled by the time the shots were ready. I think we can say the same about COVID. It hasn't come out yet, but that's what I would say. The vaccine resulted in an increased risk of developing Guillain-Barre syndrome. I think it's Guillain-Barre syndrome, leading to muscle weakness and paralysis. In 1999, the CDC misspent $22.7 million appropriated for chronic fatigue syndrome and was investigated in 2001 for squandering $13 million on hepatitis C research. In 2000, the agency essentially lied to Congress about how it spent up to $7.5 million earmarked each year since 1993 for research on the deadly Hanta virus. I didn't know about that one. Quote, instead, apparently without asking Congress, the CDC spent much of the money on other programs that the agency thought needed funds more. Here we go. The Washington Post disclosed at the time that the divisions were impossible to trace because of shoddy CDC bookkeeping practices. Yeah, so they find ways around these things. In 2009, the CDC recalled 800,000 doses of swine flu vaccine for children aged 6 months to 3 years after the products manufactured by Sanofi Pasteur failed potency tests. All right. I'm going to take one more quick break here and then I'll be back. Voice is fading. I'm fading. It's been a long week, but I'll be right back.
Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Yeah, see what you're missing, China? China dropped off our world map. I think the Xi Jinping government has blocked us from gaining access to the Chinese population, unless, of course, they block access to us for the entire Chinese Communist Party, too, which would be very interesting to find out. I don't think we're going to, but, you know, these are the things that amuse me. Back to the article, Real Clear Politics, March of 2020, Michelle Malkin said, in 2012, the CDC's main building housing infectious anthrax, SARS, and monkeypox. I don't even know what that is. gases were discovered to have been leaking deadly pathogens to a flawed engineered airflow system. Well, isn't that special? In 2014, the CDC's lackadaisical response to Ebola virus gave the green light to patient zero, Thomas Eric Duncan, and infected medical personnel to board commercial airlines while ill, exposing untold numbers of travelers to the deadly disease, expensive isolation chambers that have been subsidized by taxpayers to the tune of $50 million sat buried in a Georgia warehouse. This sounds like our government. She says, for the past few years, the agency has employed a fear campaign to induce Americans to get regular flu shots, formulated based on guesswork, using flawed statistics and despite international scientific conclusions that there is, quote, no evidence to support the CDC's assumptions that the vaccine reduces transmission of the virus or the risk of potentially deadly complications. Yeah, flu shot's kind of a special case. I find it quite fascinating that you can get a flu shot in a grocery store. You know, I find it fascinating that, that this is a common thing where they kind of guess and what the flu strain they think is going to come out, okay? So it could be any number of flu strains that affects us every winter. They don't know, so they guess. They say, well, we think it's going to be this one this year. And so they make a whole bunch of that, you know, flu vaccine with squalene and, you know, which is suspected of Gulf War syndrome and a bunch of other stuff in there, right? Read the insert. I read the insert for COVID-19 vaccines from Moderna. Read the insert. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, right? So the flu shot comes out. For one strain of the flu, there might be 15 strains. I mean, there might be 20 strains. There might be 50 different strains of flu. They don't know, but they can only produce like one or two. So they have to guess, you know, the maximum number of people they're going to get the, you know, going to be protected allegedly by their flu shot. And so the same thing's happening with COVID, because Dr. Peter McCullough, reported that there are now 14 strains of coronavirus circulating around the United States. He also reported that the Wuhan original flu, the one that the vaccines are made for, doesn't exist in the United States anymore. So not only are the vaccines giving you a messenger RNA, you know, new DNA directional instruction manual, okay, they're made for a virus that's no longer here. That alone should cause them to stop. In fact, if the government were actually on top of this and wanted to do, you know, had your health, you know, in their interest, they would stop the vaccine and say, well, you know what, the virus is gone. We need to design new ones. That's what they should have done. All right. Or they should have, you know, cured this virus with hydroxychloroquine, so you wouldn't need a vaccine, or any number of other things rather than what they're doing, which is pushing everybody to get vaccines and rewarding people and having lotteries and all these stupid things they're doing now to try and induce people to get the vaccine, when in reality, you know, it could be one of the most dangerous things that's ever been put on the American people or the world population for that matter. You know, Africa and India, they're taking chloroquine for malaria and stopping COVID that way. And it's working. It's fascinating. All right. I read that. Okay. Just a couple more paragraphs. Just this week, the Informed Consent Action Network reported astonishing results from its lawsuit against the CDC to obtain scientific documentation for the agency's claim that, quote, vaccines do not cause autism. Well, isn't that interesting? Specifically, for the first 7 vaccines given to your child in the first 6 months of life, CDC has stonewalled and then finally produced 20 studies, 18 of which were irrelevant to ICANN's public records request, and two of which suggest that vaccines may indeed cause autism. In other words, the CDC is lying while continuing to smear vaccine critics as, quote, conspiracy theorists and public health threats. Huh. Last paragraph. As if to underscore my point about this agency's misdirected priorities and rank political pandering, the CDC director this week found it more urgent to condemn Republicans as racist for accurately describing the origins of the virus from Wuhan, China, than do their job. Informed diagnosis, the best people who have now been rewarded with more than $8.3 billion in new emergency funding are not in charge. So there you go. Got about 5 minutes left. And shut the show down early. You know, it's been an interesting week here. But so that's what's going on the CDC. I think the worst of it when they wanted to do gun control again. They said, well, we want to study gun control. We want to, we think that gun ownership is a mental illness. You know, the CDC should be seriously looked at, you know, for all the problems, the analysis, the everything they're doing. You know, needs to be taken a look at. They need a full audit, as do a lot of government agencies. Can I do this one or more article? This is one of the articles I found. I'm still looking for the original article I got that started the show off March 2nd when I had the cure for coronavirus as chloroquine. This one actually is in Gateway Pundit. It's March 27th. So this is right in the last, you know, little bit of the, in the second week of the 15 days to slow the spread, March 20th of 2020. Huge. Second French study by Dr. Raoult finds hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin helped every patient in study group. Okay. So if they know this stuff works, why do they demonize it? Why do they try and get rid of it? This guy proved it works. You know, Dr. Zelenko proved it works. Doctors all over the world proved it works. So the article says, on Friday night, Laura Ingram reported on the latest study by French research team led by renowned epidemiologist Dr. Dieter Raoult, was able to repeat his findings from a previous study. Yeah, I'm with the previous one. This time, Dr. Raoult administered hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin to 80 patients and observed improvement in every case, except for a very sick 86-year-old with an advanced form of coronavirus infection. Yeah, so there you go. Stuff works, folks. it just does. So he's got more articles, more tweets, more things like that. So we'll leave you to take a look at that as well. 3 minutes left. I want to stay 3 minutes. Think about it. Yeah, probably not. Anyway, let me just go over my notes here. See if there's anything else that I had to report on for you. I don't think so. I think we pretty much covered the articles as well. But let me just talk about, just for a couple minutes, about individual freedom. You know, the show is about individual freedom. This is about, as we know, you know, not just writing legislation, but supporting it, telling your friends, telling people that they have the power to actually, you know, write what they want in the laws, okay? And once you do that, then you send it to us, we send it into legislators. You can send it on your own. I mean, I don't care. I mean, we're here as a bill writing service. I think we're going to be more effective in numbers, and especially as we develop more expertise in how to do citizen legislation. I think we'll be more effective here. But you can certainly do this on your own. But if we can work together and build a coalition around certain bills, I think there'd be a lot better chance of getting them passed. But just the idea that we, you know, sit around with different people and different groups and we say, well, you know, where do we need to change the law to make our lives better? Where do we need to change the law to give us more freedom? Where do we need to take out the special interest power? Where do we need to take, like, the school board and the state legislature and the city council and the county commission? Where do we need to change what they do? Where do we need to change the financial laws? Where do we need to put in public comment periods for you know, big bills coming out of Congress? You know, where do we need to, just to go over some of the things that we do, you know, the illegal alien asset forfeiture bill. You know, why aren't we seizing the assets of illegal aliens so they're forced to leave? That'd be a simple thing to do. You know, why do we still have a withholding tax from World War II? And that should be gone. You know, you should, you know, have your full tax bill. There's no tax withheld, but you still owe. So figure it out. You know, that's what a free country does. So there's so many things we could do that we're not doing. It's really quite staggering. Anyway, this is Memorial Day. The good parts about this is that you get to remember the people that gave their lives for us. And the bad part is that they had to give their lives for us. That's the sad part. But the fact is that people were willing to do it, and the fact that people are willing to do it makes a huge difference. I mean, it goes to the character of this nation, that people are willing to die for freedom. So the question is, if they're willing to die for our freedom, what are you willing to do to live for our freedom? Okay, I want you to think about that. Think about that over the weekend. And if you have an observation, you know, call me next week. You know, what do you plan to do now to live for your freedom? In what way do you live for your freedom? And what action do you take that helps you live more free? You know, what can you, you know, just individuals, even if it's just means sharing the show. I mean, that's an action. That's an action of defiance. Telling your friends, your neighbors, you know, saying to them, I really don't think you should get the vaccine. I've been looking into this, and I think there are problems here. You know, send in this show, send in the materials that we have here. Do the research. Question everything. Remember question authority? You know, what the 60s people used to talk about, you know, so question everything because there's a lot of things to question, you know, so how can you live a more free life? What can you do for freedom? What can you do to honor the veterans that fell? But that's not the only way to fight for freedom. And so we talk, this is like the instant place that we go. We say, well, you know, our soldiers, you know, gave us our freedom. Well, so did the founding fathers. So did people who actively pursue freedom. So did, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, granted a huge amount of freedom. So all these different ways are ways to advance freedom. So let me just leave you with that question for today, and we'll pick it up again, I think, Tuesday. I'm going to take Monday off. You know, what can you do to advance our freedom? How are you going to live more free? And if you have an answer or some ideas to talk about, let's talk about it. Anyway, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Whew, too much talking for me today. Hopefully next week I'll have less to do, but it's a good thing Jim came to join us. So have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you Monday.